Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time, discussing the human condition, providing a sounding board for mental health issues, and making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. John Huber. Thanks very much for listening. We really do appreciate it. We have another fantastic show for you today. And remember to check out our website at mainstreammentalhealth.org. And let your friends know about our show. You can listen to our podcast at iTunes at blogtalkradio.com/mainstreammentalhealth. You can also Google us at Mainstream Mental Health Radio. And we have just amazing opportunities for everybody to learn and actually have fun while they're doing it. Today we've got someone that I've known for several years, and he's just an outstanding community member. He's out there working hard, trying to have a positive impact on society. He has been graced with an ability to have a lot of control over what happens with individuals, and he's been very respectful of that, and he's very concerned with the individual and not just worried about, you know, enforcing laws and pushing authority on people. He's really worried about making changes with individuals. And I've been lucky to be a part of that. I've been lucky to be able to expose some of my students to that and do research with him. I'd like to introduce Judge David Glickler. He's just an outstanding member of our society. I'm pleased to know him and glad to be able to call him my friend. Judge Glickler, how are you?
I'm good, Dr. John. Thank you very much for that very generous intro.
Well, you know, for years in mental health, we talk about all these different areas that need to be fixed. And, you know, eventually it made me move to start my nonprofit. But I think I'm even more excited when I see other professions like lawyers and judges see that there are some problems going on in society that they can actually have a positive impact on. And, you know, as a judge, I know you're a big part in Hays County, Texas with their Veterans Court. And why don't we kind of maybe first you tell us a little bit about, you know, your motivating factors and how you got into that and what you wanted to do with that. And then we can talk about some of the research my students have had over the years and your experience and where you think it needs to go.
Well, I was fortunate in a little bit. There's always a little bit of luck involved in opportunity. When I was elected 3 years ago and took office in January of 2015, the county had just started a veterans treatment court. Veterans treatment courts are an offshoot of the historic treatment courts that began in the 80s, the drug treatment courts, where the justice system got together with a lot of players and realized that so many people getting involved with, addicted to drugs, led to more crimes, led to more trouble, led to addiction and death. They started specialty courts for where they would put drug offenders in court together. In the late 2000s, as the wave of veterans coming back from very, very traumatic experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan was hitting the U.S., they were finding a lot of veterans in trouble with the law, and veterans treatment courts got started around 2007, 2008. Our court, the Hays County Veterans Treatment Court in San Marcos, Texas, began right before I got here, so nobody really knew what they were doing with it. I had always had a very strong relationship with military folks in my life. I didn't serve myself. I didn't have direct family members, but I was close to people who were. And so I took over the Veterans Treatment Court and realized quickly what a great opportunity it was. We take veterans who are in trouble with the law, usually minor trouble, misdemeanors, which is not something they can go to the penitentiary for, and usually nonviolent offenses. And they have some kind of service-connected issue, whether it's PTSD or a traumatic brain injury that's altered their mental health, or substance abuse or anger issues, and it's related to their crime. And we put them in what I call it probation on steroids, as opposed to a normal person who might go to court and get probation and leave court and never see the judge or their lawyers again. Our veterans come back to court every 2 weeks for a phase, then every 4 weeks for a phase, and the final phase is every 6 weeks. And the goal is to fix or address any and all issues that are in their life, not just the ones that caused them to be here, for example, alcohol abuse or PTSD, if that's what led to their charge, but also make sure they're in a healthier state in terms of job, family, housing, whatever they might need. We connect veterans to the VA like they fail to adequately do for themselves, open them up to opportunities. And it's been a life-changing experience for the veterans, but also for those of us who are on the staff team, including myself. When I got there, we had 6 veterans in our court, and we hit a high around 40. We currently have 30, and we've graduated 43 in a little over 2 years.
And, you know, I know, you know, just from the data that we collected that you are having a serious impact. And I think you mentioned that, you know, when you were talking about the, you know, people are involved with the courts for different reasons, and you know, the world's kind of lined up and they end up in front of your desk there. And, it's not because they're incorrigible criminals, but when they fall into that trap and unless there's somebody there to help them get out of that cycle, they end up in it. In fact, you know, we looked at, with my students, we looked at the same types of crimes that you're dealing with in the Veterans Court. And nationally, the general population has a 68% recidivism rate, which that means that essentially 7 out of 10 people who do these kind of crimes will be involved with them again in the very near future. And it's not because they're intentionally trying to break these laws. They haven't gotten out of that pattern that gets them into trouble. And, you know, when we looked at the results from your graduates, what we find is that the recidivism rate drops below 10%. In fact, it's quite impressive. And it does point to the fact that we're probably not serving our veterans as a nation as a whole, because they get a 30-minute interview on their way out the door, but when they go into the military, they get boot camp, you know, several weeks long, teaching them to survive in a battlefield, but we don't teach them how to survive then in civilian life. And I think essentially going through those training programs and the socialization, the job skills you're basically providing that boot camp for these individuals. Unfortunately, they have to get involved with the court system before they can take advantage of that. Is that kind of what you're seeing?
Yeah, that is what we're seeing. Most of our veterans are first-time offenders. But more interestingly, about 90% of our veterans are those who are veterans who have served in the last 15 years in the Iraq-Afghanistan conflicts. And when we get them, these guys, and I'm going to say guys only because we've had about 8 women so far out of 75 veterans. But these guys, they have no idea what is out there for them, what help is available for them. There's an entire section of the Texas Veterans Commission that is dedicated to and works with the Texas Workforce Commission to help veterans find jobs. The VA benefits they have that could take care of so much for them. The local community groups that are always offering to us, you know, for example, it's Christmas time. We've had 2 different groups contact us over the last month and say, hey, we traditionally help veterans' families who are in need. Is there anybody in the court that could use a little help at Christmas? And we have 3 or 4 or 5 people in that situation. You know, their financial situation's not good because they've let their circumstances deteriorate. We talk about successes. We are funded in part by a grant from the governor's office, and one of the requirements of our grant is to keep track of statistics regarding recidivism after people graduate for up to 2 years. And that's how our partnership with you and your students got involved. I had this idea that studying these courts was something that might be more valuable to someone in your profession and maybe students interested in the profession of psychology. And but also it when our veterans graduate, they understand that their case gets dismissed, their record gets expunged. It's as if the crime and everything connected it to never happened. They want to walk out of the courthouse door and never see or hear from us again. In order to make things work better with your students as they were doing their research, I was able to explain to the veterans, look, we have to keep these statistics, but if you're being contacted by students and graduate students and professors from Texas State University instead of people in the criminal justice system, your future anonymity is guaranteed and preserved, as opposed to if we have to keep a special file for 2 years on every
right.
veteran. And so that's how we've been able to get the response we have. The kinds of things we see out, we had a graduate 2 weeks ago. He came to us. He actually had some felony drug charges, and our district attorney's office agreed to charge him only with misdemeanor so that he could enter the veterans treatment court on the condition that he went through drug rehab before he ever came to our court. When we got him, he was married and had two kids, but he had no job. His criminal offenses arose out of anger issues at the house that he was living in. While we had him in our court, we had him in our court for a total of 19 months. He did have a few issues with probation. There was a relapse once or twice, but more it was not attending meetings or scheduled appointments that he had. So we had him for a little bit extra time. At one point, he was unemployed. At one point, he was him and his wife were contemplating divorce, and at one point, they moved in with his parents, and then he took a job working as a cashier in a convenience store. Over the course of the 19 months, he got a job in a construction outfit, was making his own money, had moved into their own place, is putting a down payment on a house. Last year, we provided him and his family with support at Christmas to make sure that, you know, his kids would have a good Christmas. This year, he graduated before Christmas came. And that's just one excellent example of the kinds of successes we have with this veterans. We have no doubt that we're releasing him back into society with his record expunged. He's got a job, a house. He's, you know, self-sufficient for him and his family. And that's not the kind of success story you hear often out of regular court people who don't get the time and the attention that we're able to give the veterans in our treatment court.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, you know, what you're asking them to do a lot of times is very difficult because if I'm correct, to be part of your court, they have to sign a statement saying they are guilty and they did what they're being charged with. Is that not correct?
Right. The procedure is our program manager scours every possible list there is to find out who's been arrested and see if we can find veterans and find out if they're someone that might be eligible for the court. They'll figure out eligibility. They'll confer with the district, our assistant district attorney assigned to our court, and determine what veterans, if any, we would be willing to welcome in the court. They then, once they get past that hurdle and they are contacted and agree to the court, they can also come through other issues or manners, I should say. Some have contacted us first. Some have been referred by attorneys. But in any event, when referred, they meet with our program manager and our designated defense attorney for the court for a debriefing and interview to go over the terms and conditions. And if they agree, when they come to court on their first day, the court is a 12 to 24 month program. On their first day, they sign a written plea of guilty and enter that plea verbally. And they're told that if they fail to successfully complete the Veterans Court program, they'll return to the regular court docket with that guilty plea in place. They won't be able to fight the charge in the future. But if they successfully complete the program in 12 to 24 months, they would get a graduation, a dismissal, expunction of their records, and that's what starts their journey.
Well, and I think that says a lot about you and your corps, because there has to be a significant level of trust, especially when you're talking about, you know, someone who's looking at charges like that, and you know they have that military history, and you know they don't want to, you know, have that mark forever. That's one of the advantages for going there. But it's highly motivating, I would think, once they step into that arena and agree to that, because they're saying they're going to do it, and they believe it 100% that first day for sure, even though they may struggle with it over the next 24 months or stuff. I think that does say a lot about you and how you interact with the veterans themselves, because that's a pretty tough bridge to cross. I know just veterans who aren't involved in the criminal justice system who come into my office and we try to work through different issues, and them being able to admit that, yes, I'm doing these things that aren't appropriate for whatever reason, it's hard to cross that bridge, and you should be commended for that. I don't think every person out there could get that commitment from those veterans.
Well, I appreciate that. I have spent a lot of time on the court. I work very closely with my staff. It's only one of multiple things that I do. But I strongly believe that our veterans do deserve the opportunity. And also, you know, I've become a very big believer in specialty courts in general. You know, there are other kinds of specialty courts, include the drug courts, as I mentioned. There are DWI courts. There are mental health courts. There are child advocacy type courts, which is a combination of kids who have juvenile delinquency issues combined with CPS involvement. And I've seen, and you know, how these treatment courts work if you dedicate more time and resources and consideration to them. So it, you know, becoming a believer has given me what I feel is the right amount of dedication to the job, to helping all of our folks in the court. And the fact of the matter is the rewarding nature of this. One of the things that's fantastic in our court is when somebody pleads into court, their next appearance in court, they have to give a little speech to, as I put it, to address their peers in court, to introduce themselves, a little bit about them and their service and what they hope to get out of the treatment court. It's a three-phase program. As they promote from phase one to two and two to three, they also give a speech about what that accomplishment means. But the most amazing aspect of it is when someone graduates, because they know what it means and they know the work that it took to get there. We have graduation speeches, and so I've had 43 of them so far. And the things that you hear coming out of these guys, their thoughts, their opinions, they show that we've reached back to, you know, an earlier day in their lives, that they're such a better person. Their statements are profound. They're heartfelt. And, you know, there are quite a few people who leave court after a graduation speech, you know, a little moist in the eyes, if you will, because we've really restored these guys to their mental health, their self-confidence, and you're hearing just tremendous appreciation for the program, which just boosts you into working harder. And I just feel honored to be able to be part of it. And I believe that the program and the concept and the veterans deserve every ounce of my best effort, and that's what I give.
Well, what do you see is like a next step for your veterans court? I mean, what would you like to see in a perfect world coming up in the next, say, 12 to 18 months?
We've doubled our budget by seeking grants out of the Texas Veterans Commission, and we've increased the standards of and the quality of the people who are employed whose sole job is the Veterans Court. Our program manager, for example, served over 20 years in the U.S. Army as an NCO with an expertise in behavioral science. So the guy who's basically the gatekeeper and of our program was a behavioral science expert in the U.S. Army for the entire generation of the Iraq-Afghanistan War, going all the way back to the 80s. He served at Fort Leavenworth. He served at Okinawa, at every major base in the world. You can't get that kind of, I mean, we fell into this application. He's a full-time, his full-time job is our Veterans Court. We got a grant from the Veterans Commission to have one probation officer dedicated only to our veterans, so he can give them more time, more meetings, go do home visits. I'd like to see us be able to get a full staff on the Veterans Treatment Court. Of people that's their only job, so that we can be doing things to work with them, veterans, correct any wrongs, address any issues faster and quicker with a staff dedicated to it. And the other thing, too, is I mean, obviously, legislatures across the country are getting the message about treatment courts because in here in Texas, we have laws on the books that say when a county reaches a population of 200,000 or more, they are required by law to have a full-scale drug treatment court, a DWI court, a mental health court, and a veterans treatment court. And
wow.
Our county is not at that level yet, but we're the first treatment court. So we're really actually the guinea pig, so to speak, for our county. There are 254 counties in Texas, but there are only about two dozen counties that exceed the population of 200,000, and we're closing in on that. So it's only 10% of the counties of Texas are required to have these courts. So you hear about them in big cities, Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio. We're going to be there at the next census, and I hope to be able to build this treatment court model into a program for the county. You know, and one day when people look back and treatment courts are just as common as probation or, you know, all other kinds of things you see in the justice system, people don't bat an eye about it. It'd be very rewarding to know that the platform, the base of model for our county was the Veterans Treatment Court that we've worked on crafting and improving and getting close, you know, to as close to perfection as we can over the last 3 years.
And I think it's important to note that, you know, our Hayes County has moved forward and taken a big step before they were forced to, so to speak. But at the same time, are you finding that maybe you're getting some influx from some of these smaller counties? Are you getting cases from them that Hayes County is accepting, or how does that work?
That's a great question. And in fact, I was just asked something similar to that yesterday. Somebody said, what does the county contribute to the treatment court program? And my answer to that is the county contributes the basic infrastructure that exists in terms of the courtroom and the physical facilities, as well as I have six different kinds of cases that I hear. The treatment court is one of numerous responsibilities I have. One of my regular assistant court coordinators, one of her tasks or duties is helping coordinate for the veterans court. My regular bailiff, who's in court with me for everything I do, from jury trials to probate matters, is also the bailiff who presides over our veterans treatment court. So the infrastructure is provided by the county. And that's there. I lost my train of thought.
Well, and you know, following on to that, but what kind of my question is, do you find that there are people who are hearing about your veterans court in some of the smaller surrounding counties, or maybe
right.
not surrounding, that are trying to get you or Hayes County to accept some of their veterans into the program? Are you finding that there's a need for that, or –
Right. So my point about the infrastructure is that much, much, much smaller counties don't even have the infrastructure or the, you know, financial ability to put together a veterans treatment court on numerous levels. One, they don't have enough veterans in their county or in trouble with the law in their county to justify having a court. Two is that
right.
due to their size or their economic situation, they really can't. It doesn't make sense for them to do that either. We happen to have several counties next to us, both east and west of us, in that situation. And so through the years, we've heard of veterans in neighboring counties who are interested in our program, and we've worked out with some of these smaller counties who can't afford their own, and it doesn't make sense for them to have their own veterans treatment courts, to take their veterans and their cases into our county for the court. And basically the deal is if the veteran works through our court and they graduate, that case is dismissed. If the veteran fails out of the program and has to be removed from the program, we return the case back to the home county to deal with in the regular justice system. So although the concept of a regional veterans treatment court, we're not regional because no other counties near us that don't have veterans courts can afford to partner with us, but we're regional in theory in that if somebody comes to us from the county immediately east or two counties east or one county west where we know they don't have veterans treatment court and they don't have the infrastructure and the resources, we do accept veterans because, you know, as we say all the time, the veterans deserve everything we can give them. When I got here and we had six veterans and went to nine quickly and then we were at nine for a while, and we went to 16, people were always asking me, well, what do you think is the capacity of the court? And my answer was, I'll let you know when I get there. And and that's because I have time. Veterans Court, as an example, our actual court is every other week on a Wednesday afternoon, and it starts at 1:30. I'm out of court by 2:15 or 2:30. The veterans who need to do some follow-up with staff members in on the court, they're out of there by 2:30, 2:45. If I have to be in there 2 hours because I can serve more veterans, you know, sign me up. I'm ready for it.
Awesome. Well, I think you're doing an amazing job, and I think you're a model for even some of the bigger cities that I've seen and been a part of. You guys, and I think a lot of it has to do with you and your personality. I know, again, forming that trust with our veterans is oftentimes very difficult. And I think you have a special knack for that. Part of it is, you know, you basically let the veterans know that you're a human being too. I mean, you have a job to do, but, you know, you actually care about them. And I think they feel that. I think they get it. My students tell me that. It's just an amazing process. And I think it shows up in that recidivism rate. And I really appreciate what you're doing. And I think, you know, I know that at least one other county has contacted me because they're using you as a model to build their own out of. So I think that's telling in and of itself. So I appreciate what you're doing. And I hope your community does too.
Well, thank you, Dr. John. It's been the most rewarding thing I've gotten to do up here. And I hope I can do this for a very, very long time.
Well, I do too. I think you've shown again that you really do care about our veterans, and I think it's very important. And you know, like you, I broke my shoulder and was never allowed to enlist, but I do have family members, immediate family members who are veterans and who enlisted, and you know, it's part of my family's belief system is we need to be there for our country if we're able. And this is kind of, you know, the stuff I'm doing with the veterans myself is kind of my way of paying back and doing my service, even though I wasn't actually able to serve. And I appreciate what you're doing. So that basically concludes our interview today. And is there anything you'd like to tell our listeners? Any ways to get a hold of you or to monitor what's going on? Do you guys have a website they can look at? Is there any public dissemination of any of your data? What's going on with all of that?
Well, our county website of Hays County, Texas, we are in the county court at law. Veterans Treatment Court has a page there, but we have a Facebook page for the Hays County Veterans Treatment Court. It's on Facebook. We post things that we do in court. We've recently been giving some certificates of appreciation to stakeholders in our court who have been very, very instrumental in getting the court built or supportive in getting the court to be continued. And you can go on our Facebook page and like us there and contact us through that. Our website for the county is public, and I can be reached there. And my office phone number is 512-393-7625, and I'm always available in that office as well. And I welcome anyone who's interested, especially in the Texas area. I've put together a PowerPoint presentation about the court that lasts about 20 to 22 minutes, and I go out in the community and let everyone know what's happening here, because the one thing I can tell you is treatment courts work, and the Veterans Treatment Court in Hays County has been a model of success.
That is true. Thank you very much for coming on our show today, David. And I wish you years more luck and adventure with the Hays County Veterans Court. Again, thank you very much, Judge, and thank you for coming on.
You're welcome, Dr. John. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you. Well, that concludes our show today. I appreciate everybody listening. Thank you very much for checking us out. You can find out more about us at mainstreammentalhealth.org. And please tell your friends about our show. Listen to us on Blog Talk Radio. We also have our YouTube channel, Mainstream Mental Health. And remember, life is what happens while you're making plans. So So buckle up.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram at Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter at Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.